Oh no, someone stole my stand. Too bad for you. Somebody really short apparently stole my stand. Hi, my name is Dave. I work at Nestlake Bible Camp. That's where a lot of you guys know me from. Some of you guys apparently, from judging from your bulletin, recognize me more without my shirt on. So I don't know who's in charge of that, but haha, you win. This round. I think that Dave should have to be featured without his shirt on in the next one. The groans. Oh, where your imaginations went isn't my fault. I'm Dave Horton. I work for Nestlake Bible Camp. And this is my preaching shirt. I've had this shirt, you laugh, but I've had this shirt for, like, since the year we got married. We've been married 10 years, coming up in September, I think. And we got this on my honeymoon. And so this is the shirt that I wear. And now I'm realizing that I need to get a different shirt. It's kind of funny. Like, I got this in the mail. I was like, wow, this is great. I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, like looks kind of cool. And man, it's got all this information. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me. Like, I'm preaching this Sunday. And then driving past the sign, I was like, oh, yeah, Dave Horton. It's like, oh, that's me again. So thanks for having me out. I really appreciate Dave's invitation. The sermons that they've provided for this AD series are fantastic. But there's four pages of them. And usually four pages equals about an hour and a half. When I read them. And there should be equal amounts of groans for that comment as there was for Dave's shirt not being on. So I'm going to kind of go through this as quick as I can. I did not make a PowerPoint. And not because there isn't anything to make a PowerPoint on, but because we're in John. And we're just talking all from John today. And so if you have your Bible, or if you have your Bible on your phone, just open up John, honestly. And if you want to just pretend that you're looking at John, you want to text Aunt Edna about what you're doing for breakfast or brunch, whatever you're doing, feel free to do that. But seriously though, just keep reading through John. Just keep kind of pouring through it as I talk. I don't really care if we don't make eye contact, but just keep kind of poking through. See what jumps out at you as I talk and read through this today. If we look at John 11, 25 and 26, that's kind of where we're starting. But it really is, it's all over the place in John. John 11, 25 and 26, Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? For nearly 30 years, the one who had created the universe with his voice, he crafted furniture with his hands. And he was really good at what he did. There was no crooked tables going out. Everything was flat and nice, good-looking chairs, things like that. He wasn't a lazy dude. But Jesus was more than a master carpenter. He was also God incognito. And it's a super weird thing whenever I think about, because we get asked this at camp a lot by kids, when they start to realize that we only hear about like a very short part of Jesus' life. They say, well, what was he doing the other 30 years? And it's like, I don't know. Do you know? I don't know. He's making furniture. That's all we really know, right? There's not a lot to tell us what's really going on. And it is. That's God incognito. That's God with skin on, just doing, just being, people walking around, people bumping into him on the street. And when you think about that, it's super weird because it makes you look around a little differently and be like, that would be odd. That would be odd to go to Pine Center and to see God incognito. Or to go to Yisk and have God incognito sell you a pine bed made in Sweden, whatever it might be. I guess that's more IKEA, isn't it? His miraculous powers rank as history's best-kept secret for nearly three decades. But it's crazy when the water blushes at kind of when the Creator walks in, when the water turns red, when the water turns to wine because the Creator is near. See, this was the day that the woodbender became the waterbender. Jesus manipulated the molecular structure of water to turn it from water to wine. 757 bottles, apparently, no less. And nothing but the best. He didn't make that garbage stuff that you buy in the cardboard box. He made the nice stuff that you just don't buy. This wasn't just wine, it was fine wine. There's 34 distinct miracles that are listed out in the Gospels. While countless more went unrecorded, we're sure, John's Gospel spotlights just seven of them. And so as you're flipping through John, see if you can find those seven. We're going to look at them just really quick. Unveiling seven different dimensions of Jesus' miraculous power. In John chapter 2, the miracles begin with Jesus turning water into wine. In John chapter 4, he heals a nobleman's son long distance. He's not even there to do it. He's not even placing a hand on. It's not like a medical procedure. This is long-distance healing. And in that, he reveals that he has lordship over latitude and longitude. John chapter 5, he reveals his mastery over chronology, reversing 38 years of pain and suffering with one command. 38 years with one command. I have a son who is 6 and who is bound to... Oh, geez. Someone's cutting onions up here. I have a son who is 6 years old and is bound to a wheelchair. And my mind would explode at the thought of someone saying, long distance, oh, you want your son Tony to walk again? Done. Because you believe it is done. What happened in my brain, right? I can't imagine my son as an adult and someone saying the same thing. This is just crazy stuff. And not even being next to him, but saying it over distance. Whew. Hot up here, right? Yeah. Oh, this is going to be a blubbering sermon, I guarantee it. I'm just holding on by a thread. John chapter 6, Jesus feeds 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fish, because in God's kingdom, 5 plus 2 doesn't equal 7. 5 plus 2 equals the thousands are fed. His encore is waltzing across the waves on the Sea of Galilee. In John chapter 9, there is more miracle than meets the eye. Jesus doesn't just heal a blind man's eyes. He hardwires a blind man's brain by creating synaptic pathways between his optic nerve and his visual cortex. When you start to break down what's actually happening with these miracles, it makes you think more and more, what in the world? Who is this guy? How is that happening? And just when you think you've seen it all, the grave robber turns a tomb into a waiting room. Lazarus is dead for 4 days. 4 days dead. This isn't like maybe he was sleeping. This is like he's dead and maybe it smells really bad or maybe it doesn't smell really bad. No, it's going to smell really bad for sure. He's dead for 4 days and Jesus just calls him out. Calls him out like it's just words. And that miracle foreshadows his own death and his own resurrection. Now, if you've watched the first episode of AD series, you've kind of indirectly seen that. The 7 miracles in John's gospel are 7 signs. Each sign points straight to Jesus. That's the thing with those signs. They don't point anywhere else but to Christ. So let me offer a word of caution. Don't seek miracles. And in Christian circles, you'll bump into people and they seek miracles. Seek Christ. If you're going to seek anything, if you're going to spend the effort, if you're going to pursue something, seek the Lord. Because if you follow Jesus long enough and far enough, eventually you'll find yourself in the middle of some miracles. Everybody wants a miracle. Who doesn't want to see a miracle, right? Everybody wants to see it right in front of them. People ask us, how come God doesn't do that right in front of me? But here's the catch. No one wants to be in the situation that necessitates a miracle. Who wants a son that can't walk? Right? Who wants a brother that's dead? Who desires these things? Who passions for these things in their life? It'd be weird if you put your hand up. But we do desire the miracles that come out of these things. Seek Christ. Of course, you can't have one without the other. The prerequisite for a miracle is a problem. The bigger the problem, the greater the potential miracle. Having a wedding feast that's out of wine doesn't seem like a big panic to me. It's like, oh no, I'm not really a wine drinker anyways, but no wine. Having a brother who is dead for 4 days, that seems like a bigger panic, right? The greater the problem, the greater the miracle. You know, and nothing's changed since Jesus turned water into wine, healed a blind man that was born blind, or walked out of the tomb 3 days later after his crucifixion. He's the God that makes your impossible possible. That's the God we're talking about. It's funny, you know, what's done is done. The line of time, the arrow of time points in one direction. It doesn't turn around. Like there's the Superman movie where he flies backwards. Like he flies and then flies backwards. It makes it sound like his feet are going forward. He flies and then reverses the earth and changes time. You guys seen that? Me either, because I'm 31. It's really old. that's what I'm hinting at. We don't get to do that, right? Lois Lane dies, he reverses the rotation of the earth, thus reversing time, because of course that would work, and then he goes back and saves Lois Lane in the past and comes forward. You know, that doesn't work. Time travels forward. You can't unbake cookies, and who would want to? Should be a crime to even talk about it. That guy, get out. You can stay, please stay. If this is your first Sunday, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I went to church, the guy told me to leave, so... you can't uncut hair, as I have found out. You can't undelete a document. Who's ever deleted that document? You know the one. I've deleted that document. In college, I deleted one. It was like, oh no, what have I done? I deleted it. You can't undo it. You can't unrun red lights. These are a few lessons I've learned the hard way. Some of them you can laugh off, right? Some of you can say, oh, that was embarrassing. Or, woo, that was a close call. I've run a red light once. And I got on the other side, I was like, that was close. That was almost something terrible. I just didn't see it, I swear. Are there any police here? That could be counted as a confession, I think. Then there are those irreversible moments that they leave a hole in your heart forever. And if I just say that and I let you think on that, it doesn't take long for us to come up with those moments. Those moments that happen in our lives where we say, this happened, and it just, here is where I felt it. Just a hole in my heart. Like you're standing at the foot of a casket. Like you're on the other side of a car accident. You know, and I don't want to trigger something. I don't want to stand up here and trigger something for you and say, dwell on it, think on it. But I am saying, we all know this is true. We all know those things happen. And time just keeps moving forward. If you've ever been in on the receiving end of divorce papers, answered a frantic phone call. One of my favorite phone calls I got was from my wife. I was at work and she called me, and I picked up. So they called over the radio. Dave, there's a phone call for you. I'm busy. Dave, you need to get this phone call. Okay, I'm on my way. So I pick it up and there's my wife blubbering away. My wife doesn't cry ever, ever, ever. And so I was like, something's really wrong. I can't, like, honey, I can't understand what you're saying. There's three of them. Three of them. Well, we had just been to a fertility clinic, and so there's three of them. There's three of them. And so my wife called, completely freaking out, and she found out through doing an ultrasound, and I skipped that ultrasound because we'd done a lot of ultrasounds. I am the worst husband alive because I skipped. Why would I go to that one? There's been tons of ultrasounds. I'm not going to that one. Dave, there's three of them. There's three of them. And so we had a three-year-old in a wheelchair, we had a two-year-old, and then we were going to have 3 0-year-olds. And so she was freaking out. But in my mind, we got the best bang for our buck. Because it's a fertility clinic, you're paying for children, you get multiple children, you've gotten a bargain. You know, and that was a hilarious moment. She was crying, I was laughing, later I was crying. But I also remember the moment where we went in for, oh jeez, whew, I could do this, where I went in for the ultrasound, and we found out that there wasn't three, we'd lost one. That sucked. But we've got four great kids. I even brought this. You know, you get the messages from a lab that your worst nightmares have come true about your health. But you know, these things aren't over until God says they're over. Isn't that the way it is, right? Some of you guys have had the joy of seeing those healing miracles, and that is so exciting. You know, when Jesus walked out of the tomb, the word impossible leaves our vocabulary. Because how can we ever say that? That is impossible. Because we have a Lord, a risen Lord from the tomb. And if we really believe that, what is impossible? What else could not happen? And his resurrection isn't something that we celebrate one day a year on Easter Sunday. It's something that we celebrate every single day. Now, if we look at the seventh miracle, see, the seventh miracle reveals the true identity, the full identity of Jesus. He's not just the winemaker. He's not just the water walker. As impressive as those miracles are, and those are impressive miracles, he is the grave robber. He takes Lazarus and pulls him out of the grave. And he saves his boldest claim for last. This is John 11:25. I am the resurrection and the life. That's a pretty bold claim. I am the resurrection and the life. If I say that, then that guy should be kicking me out. Right? In that seventh miracle, he reveals a lot. It's a unique claim which sets apart Jesus and puts him in a category all onto his own, the Son of God. See, Christianity isn't built on philosophy, and Christianity isn't built on a code of ethics. The footer of all of our faith is one fundamental fact, the empty tomb. Jesus' empty tomb. If it isn't empty, then something is very wrong. After cheating death by calling Lazarus out of the tomb, Jesus walked out of the tomb under his own power. That's the ultimate apologetic. There's no argument against that. If the resurrection didn't happen, then Christianity ranks as the world's cruelest hoax. If Christ is not risen, then this building and all the people in it, we're all a part of the biggest hoax ever, if he is not risen. See, we'd be living a lie. But if Jesus walked out of the tomb 2,000 years ago, see, all bets are off. Or maybe it's really that all bets are on. All of our bets are on Jesus risen. If they're not on that, then that's a loss. I say Bono. Some people say Bono. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? It's B-O-N-O, and I'm not Irish. So I say Bono, but some of you guys know Bono. He's the lead singer for U2. You guys heard of U2? Yeah? Has anyone not heard of U2? Good, okay. They've been around forever. In an interview with Rolling Stone magazine, U2 frontman Bono, was asked his opinion on Jesus with this question. Christ has high rank among the world's great thinkers. This is the question he was asked. But Son of God, isn't that far-fetched to think that? This is what the lead singer of U2 had to say. I'm just going to read it straight off of here. No, it's not far-fetched to me. Look, I could do an Irish accent, but it would be awful. Look, the secular response to Christ's story always goes like this, that he was a great prophet who had a lot to say along the lines of all the other great prophets like Elijah, Muhammad, Buddha, Confucius. But actually, Christ doesn't allow you that. He doesn't let you off the hook. Christ says, no, I'm not saying I'm a teacher. Don't call me teacher. I'm not saying I'm a prophet. I'm saying I'm the Messiah. I'm saying I'm God incarnate. And people say, no, please, just be a prophet. Because we can deal with just a prophet, right? No, just be a prophet. A prophet we can take. So what you're left with is either Christ is who he said he is, the Messiah, or he's a complete nutcase. I don't know if that makes you respect any of Bono's music anymore. I still have a hard time listening to Sexy Boots because it's an awful song. It's terrible, the worst. While most people have no issue, if you just go out on the streets and you start to ask about who Jesus is, if you start to ask those questions, most people have no issue accepting Jesus as a compassionate healer or a wise teacher or even a religious prophet. But that isn't who Jesus said he was. He claimed to be the Son of God, and C.S. Lewis famously observed this, Jesus is either a liar, a lunatic, or in fact, he is who he claimed to be, Lord. There is no middle ground. Either Jesus is Lord of all, or he is not Lord of all. So which is it? That one decision will determine your eternal destiny. It will make the impossible possible. See, after asserting his identity as a resurrection and the life, he pops this question, a point-blank question, to Martha. This is John 11:26. He says, do you believe this? And if I'm losing you at all, just go to John 11 and read through that. Read through what Jesus says to Martha there. Read through what he does, how he calls Lazarus out. Remember that Lazarus hadn't walked out of the tomb yet. Martha hadn't seen Lazarus walk out of the tomb. Yet Martha responded with a simple profession of faith. Yes, Lord. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord. Not yet, yes, Lord, if. Not yes, Lord, but. Yes, Lord. One little yes can change your life. One little yes can change your eternity. The litmus test is the same now as it was then. The only question on God's final exam is, do you believe this? It's not multiple choice. It's true or false. And it's the most important question that you're ever going to have to answer. Do you believe this? That one decision will determine your eternal destiny. The good news is that it's an open book exam, that we get to know the truth. We're not guessing. We can stand on it firm and say, yes, I believe. And God reveals the right answer in Romans 10:9. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. There's not a lot of mystery to that verse. There's not a lot of, I'm not really sure what he's trying to say. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And it's one of those decisions that changes your everyday decisions. It changes the way that you treat humanity around you. It changes the way that you parent. It changes the way that you work. It changes everything about you. Or it should change everything about you. The resurrection of Jesus is the axis around which our faith revolves. When Jesus rose from the dead, it radically redefined reality. The resurrection is the history changer. It's the game changer. I've heard it talked about, it's the hub of history. That's the hub that the wheel of history turns around, is Christ dead and risen again. But the trick is learning to live as if Jesus died yesterday, was risen today, and is coming back tomorrow. That's the trick. If we could live like that. The resurrection isn't something that we celebrate once a year by putting on the Easter Bunny costume, right? Shouldn't be something we celebrate just once a year. And for some of you guys, you've come to church just at Easter, or this AD flyer thing has gotten your attention. And we're telling you this, we celebrate Easter, this church celebrates Easter every Sunday. And the people of this church celebrate Easter every day because they have nothing else to hold on to but that truth. It's a big deal. And this TV series is doing the best that it can to show why. The resurrection of dead bodies is going to be nothing short of miraculous. See, but the resurrection miracles, they don't stop here. God raises dreams from the dead. When he works in your life, he takes dreams that have been dead and brings them to life. He resurrects dead relationships that have died and come back to life. I have long lost cousins. I had 6 cousins, and then one of them was killed in a car accident when she was 18. And then I had 5 cousins. And it made me ask the question, where are all my other cousins? How do I have 5 cousins? And then I had always known that I had an Aunt Becky and an Uncle Mark, and I'd never met them. The families had been out of touch for over 30 years. There had been a falling out between my grandpa and Uncle Mark, and then they had never talked in 30 years. But at my grandpa's funeral, they sent flowers, which was a pretty big deal in the family. It was like, who are these flowers from? They're from Aunt Mark and Becky. It was like, oh my word. So after losing my cousin, I decided, this sucks. This is ridiculous. These cousins that I have out there somewhere, they're going to marry people they meet in college. They're going to become best friends with people that they work with. They're going to take strangers and make them their most closest personal friends. And I said, how come I don't even get a shot at that just because I'm related? Because I'm related, I don't even get to meet them. I said, that's ridiculous. So I went on the hunt. Thank you, Facebook, for making it possible to creep on anybody anywhere. I should note, I have an Uncle Dave. Like, I'm Dave Horton. I have an Uncle Dave Horton. And so there's 2 of us. Now, Uncle Dave is, of course, Becky's brother, if you're tracking this. So I forgot about that. So I found their phone number. They live down in Bellingham. And I called them up and I said, hi, this is Dave Horton. And immediately my Aunt Becky thought, this is my brother calling. And she's like, this is who? I said, this is Dave Horton. I'm your nephew. And she said, oh, I thought you were my brother. I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot about that. Talk, talk, talk. Yeah, I'm not interested. She said, it's been too long. I have no interest in getting back together to know who you are. I said, that's great. You know, that's your choice. But I said, listen, I'm going after your kids. I said, I'm going to try to get to know your kids. And I told her the same thing. I said, it's ridiculous that I'm not allowed to get to know your children because of what your husband and my grandpa had between each other. I was like, I'm taking a shot at them, and they're going to make their own individual choice. She said, I'm not going to help you. And I said, I assume that. And I said, you know, hopefully we can meet one day, but I'm going after these guys. So literally, with under an hour on Facebook, I found most of them. It turns out the youngest, there's 5 of them, the youngest boy is a jazz drummer, and like drumming is a thing that I do. Actually, the last time I was in this church was playing drums at Dave Cool's funeral. And was playing the drums that Dave made me at Dave Cool's funeral. That was tough, really tough. But I was like, that's amazing. And then got in touch with the oldest one. It turns out she's a little out there. It turns out I am too, though. And got in touch with one that actually lived in near Seattle. One lives in Sacramento, one lives in Texas, one's on a cruise ship constantly, the other one's in the military, and got in touch with these cousins. A bunch of them said, yeah, I'm good. Turns out they were the boys, which is makes sense, because as me and my brothers barely talk, now there's something between us, we just don't call each other, because why would you? We'll just wait till we see each other. But there was this interesting thing where my grandma was, she was losing life. She was starting to fade out. So I called my cousin Jen, who I'd never met before, and I said, listen, we're driving through Seattle. Do you want to get together and just meet? We'll go do dinner. She said, I'd love to. And I said, well, you know, do you want to go meet your grandma? She said, I don't know. I'm a little overwhelmed by that. But short, long story short, we ended up meeting at the care home where my grandma was at, and she met my grandma. And then we ended up going for dinner, and it was great. We got along. And then months later, when my grandma passed, I called my cousin Jen and said, hey, you're welcome to come to the funeral. All the uncles and aunts and cousins, you said they're excited to meet you if you want to come. She ended up coming to the funeral. She ended up hanging out with us for hours after. And then she got engaged just after that, and I ended up getting invited to the wedding. So I drove 11 hours from Prince George to Seattle by myself, which was a hoot. I slept in the cab, and I went to her wedding, knowing that my aunt would be there too. And I said, well, she doesn't know really who I am. Tiny wedding, 60 people crammed in this little room. Nobody had a clue who I was. She didn't tell anybody who I was. I met my other cousins, and they started to do the whole reception thing, and I figured, you know, my aunt wasn't really making eye contact. I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, if she wants to ignore me, that's her thing. I'm not going to be harsh or anything. So at the wedding, and they start to do like a mother-son dance, father-daughter dance, but for the mother-son dance, her other two sons weren't there. So my cousin said, Dave, dance with my mom. And so I go over, and now I have my hands on my Aunt Becky. And she said, where are you from? I said, oh, I'm from Prince George. I said, you're from Prince George? Did you drive all the way here for this? I said, yeah. Overnight, I slept in the parking lot. She said, you slept in the parking lot? I said, that's crazy. She said, who are you? I said, I'm your nephew. I'm Dave Horton. She looked at me, and she said, no, you're not. And we danced, and we talked, and I met my Aunt Becky. And I saw a dead relationship risen from the dead. And it was really weird. And she invited me. She said, you are not, because I had to drive back to New West that night. She said, you're not driving to New West. You're staying in my house. And I said, no, I can't stay in your house. I really do have to leave. We have an open invite into her house. I met her husband, Mark. And we got, you know, it's weird, super weird to meet your aunt. Who are you? I'm Dave Horton. I'm your nephew. No, you're not. And I have no doubt that that kind of stuff happens because I'd like to think that I pursue Christ first and that he likes to resurrect those dead things. And he chose me to be a part of that. That could have happened on its own. One of those cousins could have come to us. But I had the joy of being able to be a part of that. What a crazy thing. You know, it's one of those things in those dead relationships. There's not a lot of laughter often. No one had laughed or smiled since the crucifixion either. And when Jesus walked out of the tomb, nobody could stop laughing. The grave robber steals back what the enemy has taken. And then he gives it to us with interest. It's a crazy thing. This Christmas, I sat with my mom. And we talked about her cancer. And again, I'm really not trying to trigger stuff in you. I'm not trying to get an emotional response by telling you these stories of heartache and heartbreak. But this is what happened in my life. Christmas, we sat with my mom. We talked about her cancer. She had had it 5 years ago. It had come back, but it was a different cancer altogether. And then from November to December, it was quick. So we're talking at Christmas. We talked about which way it could go, what to do if things got really bad, what songs to play at her funeral. I have a cardboard cutout of my mother, which is a whole story unto itself. And we talked about, what do you do with a cardboard cutout of your mom? Like a full-size, life-size cardboard. She's like, well, don't put me in the trash. And then I shoot. I don't hunt. I just shoot guns, like target stuff with my kids. She said, well, don't shoot me. That'd be weird. I was like, well, of course that'd be weird, Mom. It's weirder that you said that. And I was like, what about like a Viking funeral where I could like float you out? Like the card and I could like fire a flaming arrow. She's like, don't do that. So I actually have two of them. She had two of these things made for some event she was at. Now I have two of them, and I have this many ideas what to do with them. So if you'd like one, You can't have it. That's weird. But that was tough, man. And her cancer got bad fast. And in late February, she's gone. You know, and when we talked with her at Christmas, through the tears, we talked about what would be her eventual loss with no idea. We talked about how she wouldn't get to be with the grandkids. She was 59. I always feel like I should sing soprano whenever I start to cry. We talked about the loss here, and we cried a lot. We got to sit in the hospital room with her for the week before she passed. We got to talk with my brothers about her, things she probably didn't like hearing. And we cried. But through all of that, somehow we always ended up at laughter. Somehow through all the tears, we ended up at laughter because my mom's life relied off of the risen Christ. That's what her life relied off of. And I got to say this at her funeral too. She was broken and she was beat up. She had walked through a divorce. She had raised 3 teenage boys. I'm the smallest one by a lot. That's a lot of pound for pound to raise. She had walked through some tough stuff, but people always looked at my mom like, boy, she is strong and she is confident. She had been the president of a couple of international organizations and had done cancer treatments while being the president. People were like, wow, she's so strong. She's so raw. We got to say to her friends, do not confuse her strength for anything but this. She found her strength in a risen Lord. That day by day, she talked to a living God who made himself available through the death and resurrection of his son. And if you want that strange confidence, go and find Jesus. We got to say that to her coworkers, to all of her buddies that she did this international stuff with. We got to say that to her family, to her friends. My mom's life relied off the risen Christ. He stole the fear of death from my mom's mind. That is the weirdest thing, to talk to your mother who is passing, for her to say, I'm ready to go. I lived a great life. I'm going to miss your kids like crazy. But I'm ready to go. Do you have that? Do you have that same faith? Has the fear of death been stolen from you and replaced with a really strange joy? The power of the grave was taken from her. Because of Christ, we can smile again. Because of Christ, we can laugh again. When Jesus died on the cross, Satan smirked. He thought he had won. But the grave robber got the last laugh. He always does. And if you give him the chance, well, he'll give you a second chance as well. I'm going to call up the worship team right now. I'm going to pray, if you'll pray with me. Father, there is no way of saying thank you enough for your desire to bring your creation back to you. God, there is no way to say thank you enough for you to send your son to die for us so that we can look at death and say it has no sting. So I just pray that through this series on TV, as goofy as it is to talk about something like that, God, that this would really show people what it is to have hope and to have life. So Lord, just pray that all of us as individuals, that we wouldn't just get busy with the day-to-day of life, but Lord, that we would look at each day as an opportunity to put you on the throne as Lord and Savior. And God, in my own life, I thank you for giving me laughter through tears. I thank you for giving me a mother that followed you. God, just for your desire to use me to bring cousins and aunts back into relationship and to know that it is your desire to do that with us. So we just pray all these things in your name, Lord. Amen.